And if you look at the treaty of the Prophet Muhammad upon him be peace himself, he had a treaty with the Jews, with the Jewish tribes, and he said they should not be harmed, and they act as one body. This is unprecedented in history. We're not fighting the Jews, we're fighting Zionism. Our job is to take care of all human beings, to give them dignity, and that's extremely important. If you want peace, then don't have apartheid. You can never have, haven't we learned from South Africa? South Africa had to dismantle the apartheid state in order for peace to exist. You cannot have peace with injustice. You cannot have harmony with injustice. You cannot have peace with apartheid. So remove the apartheid system. Number two, stop illegally occupying someone else's land. Stop growing the settlements. For example, the academic Glenn E. Robinson in The Death of the Two-State Solution, Israel, the Palestinians, and the Arab World in the Age of Netanyahu says the following. The most important reason for the defeat of the Palestinian National State Building Project has been Israel's settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which have been strongly promoted by Netanyahu since 2009. The preclusion of any serious future withdrawal from the West Bank was the reason why the Likud party put the settlement project on steroids after its 1977 election victory. The Likud's settlement drive was designed to keep the West Bank under permanent Israeli control and had both political and strategic dimensions. The Israelis, the government, never wanted peace, and it's clear from their actions. Also, with regards to the two-state solutions, none of the two-state solutions were truly two-state solutions. It was always a subjugated Palestinian people, always. As Edward Said famously said, that it was an instrument of Palestinian surrender, a Palestinian Versailles. The Palestinians have in effect discounted the unilateral and international acknowledged claim to the West Bank and Gaza. And this, he was referring to the famous Oslo Accords that was basically, you know, famously, they thought this was a great achievement from the Israelis, but in actual fact, it was just further subjugating the Palestinian people, and they had to basically surrender most of their land that belonged to them.
And on that, I want to thank both you gentlemen for coming in today. Mark, Hamza, thank you, and I think there's a lot for us to unpack moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
And that does it for another week. I'd like to once again thank our special guest, Dr. Mark Humphreys and Hamza Tortsis. In the meantime, the conversation will be back next week with more investigations and analysis. I'm Sean Murray. Bye for now.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The Limelight.
The fast food giant McDonald's has cited the Israeli regime's war in Gaza as a factor in the company's missing its first quarterly sales target in nearly 4 years. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Bloomberg News Agency reported recently numerous major Western brands have shed customers and seen profits dented due to boycott campaigns in West Asia targeting companies seen as supporting the Israeli regime in its brutal war in Gaza. The Israeli regime declared its war on the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas after the latter's October 7th surprise attack that killed an estimated 1,200 Israelis. An Israeli offensive that followed has resulted in a reported massacring of over 30,000 Palestinians in the enclave and sparked a wave of anti-Israeli boycott movements in majority Muslim countries throughout the world. According to Bloomberg News Agency, the shares of American Restaurants International, which operates KFC, Pizza Hut, Krispy Kreme, and Hardee's franchises in West Asia, have dropped by 27% on the Saudi Stock Exchange in the past 3 months. Analysts expect the company's first quarter profits to plunge on account of the boycotts. Coca-Cola's Turkish distributor saw sales volume drop by 22% in the fourth quarter of 2023 against the previous 3 months, after the country's parliament joined the boycott movement in November and said it would remove the soft drink from its cafeterias. According to the fast food giant's chief executive officer, Chris Kempczinski, McDonald's franchises in the region have experienced a meaningful business impact from boycotts, although he did not disclose the exact scope of the losses. The company has been in hot water among West Asian customers since mid-October, when its franchisee in the occupied Palestinian territories boasted on social media platforms that it was giving free meals to Israeli soldiers. Other Western corporations, including Starbucks, IBM, and Nestle, have also faced boycotts. Commenting on the trend, Fawaz Georges, professor of West Asian politics at the London School of Economics, told Bloomberg News Agency, "So far, whether McDonald's or Starbucks, they're hurting. The perception that Washington favors Israel really affects these corporations because America is implicated in Israel's brutal war on Gaza." Meanwhile, local brands have seen a boost in business due to the boycotts. According to Bloomberg, in Kuwait, homegrown coffee stores saw earnings soar over the past 3 months as customers largely stopped visiting Starbucks. According to its founder, Moaf Fauri, Jordanian coffee chain Astrolabe saw sales jump by 30%. He noted that the chain has dropped American and French products across its branches and instead buys from local sources. According to commercial director Youssef Atwan in Egypt, the local soda brand Spiro Spathis has seen sales skyrocket. Youssef Atwan said, "Suddenly we were bombarded with orders from supermarkets, restaurants, and we were trying hard to cope with the demand. Clients would go to restaurants and either ask for our brand or at least refuse to drink those on the boycott list." Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. McDonald's cited the Israeli war in Gaza as a factor in the fast food giant's missing its first quarterly sales target in nearly 4 years. McDonald's chief executive officer Chris Kempczinski said on Monday, 7th of February, that the war had a disheartening effect on sales in West Asia region and other Muslim-majority nations such as Malaysia and Indonesia. Chris Kempczinski said in a conference call, "So long as this conflict, this war, is going on, we're not expecting to see any significant improvement in sales." He added, "It's a human tragedy what's going on, and I think that does weigh on brands like ours." Sales growth for the fast food chains division for West Asia, China and India during October to December reached 0.7%, far below market expectations of 5.5%. The slump comes after customers in Muslim countries called for a boycott of McDonald's in response to its Israeli franchisee donating thousands of free meals to Israeli soldiers. Following the announcement by McDonald's Israel, Franchisees in Saudi Arabia, Oman, Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates, Jordan, Egypt, Bahrain and Turkey distance themselves from the donations and collectively pledge millions of dollars in aid to the Palestinians in Gaza. While the Chicago-based McDonald's is known as one of the most iconic US brands, most of its restaurants worldwide are locally owned and operated. McDonald's Chief Executive Officer Chris Kempczinski said last month that the war and associated boycott campaign was having a meaningful effect on business in the region. McDonald's is among a number of Western brands that have been hit hard with boycotts due to their perceived support for the Israeli regime. Last week, the cafe chain Starbucks slashed its annual sales forecast, citing a slump in business in West Asia. The British newspaper The Telegraph has also covered the same story and tells us more. The chief executive officer of the fast food giant McDonald's claimed recently that misinformation about McDonald's support for Israel is having a meaningful impact on its sales in West Asia region. The chief executive officer of McDonald's, Chris Kempczinski, said calls from pro-Palestinian groups to boycott McDonald's over the war in Gaza were harming operations. McDonald's has been targeted by pro-Palestinian campaigners after photographs and videos on social media sites showed franchise stores in Israel giving free meals to Israeli soldiers during the bombardment of the Gaza Strip. The Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement, the BDS movement, a pro-Palestinian organization, called for people to boycott McDonald's in November after franchisees openly supported the Israeli military. Chris Kempczinski, McDonald's chief executive officer, said in a blog, "Several markets in West Asia and some outside the region are experiencing a meaningful business impact due to the war and associated misinformation that is affecting brands like McDonald's." Kempczinski claimed, "This is disheartening and ill-founded. In every country where we operate, including in Muslim countries, McDonald's is represented by local owner-operators who work tirelessly to serve and support their communities, while employing thousands of people, their fellow citizens. People throughout Pakistan and other Muslim countries are increasingly joining a campaign to boycott the Israeli regime and American products in response to Israel's ongoing brutal war in Gaza. As part of that movement, an exhibition has been set up in the port city of Karachi to showcase local brands and encourage support for products that are not associated with either the Israeli regime or the United States. Also, hundreds of pro-Palestinian protesters have taken to the streets of London, England, calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and a boycott of Israeli-linked brands. The demonstrators were part of a wider campaign to boycott Israeli goods and companies that support Israel's ongoing genocidal war in the Gaza Strip.
Face to face.
Welcome everyone, I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today it's my pleasure to welcome to this program Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki.
Sheikh Ibrahim Yaqub Zakzaki is a prominent Muslim scholar and a leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria. In the 1970s, during the peak of communist activism on university campuses around the world, he proposed a different path as an activist, and that is Islam, which he said could be the path forward for all aspects of life. He founded the Islamic movement in Nigeria in the 1980s while still at the university. It was a small grassroots movement. However, the organization has now grown to have millions of followers. Some estimates state that as many as 20 million people are part of the Islamic movement in Nigeria now. Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki says that his movement has been successful because its main message has been one of fighting oppression and having sovereignty over one's own land and resources.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki. I'd like you to give us some short points about the highlights of your life that got you from being a college student or a young student to then the leader of the Islamic movement of Nigeria.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa sallallahu ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala tayyibin at-tahirin ma'asum. Personally, I don't like to speak about myself. I would prefer that others speak on my own.
But who better to speak about what you've done?
Well, presently I'm 70 years old. I was born May 1953. Early life was studied in local Islamic schools, according to traditional way. My father was a Quranic teacher, so I started learning from him. Learning from, you know, rudimentary up to the level of, you know, memorizing some parts, and then he delivered me to another guy, Quranic school. Then in, we have what we call, after Quranic school, we start what we call book school. That's why I start learning from book. It includes all different subjects in Islam, ranging from Tawheed, theology, fiqh, jurisprudence, luga, that's language, literature, and so many other subjects. All the books are in Arabic. You will read it in Arabic, and there will be translation in a local language and explanation in local language.
So you were always interested in Islamic studies?
That's what we are doing. And I attended different schools from different sheikhs, because normally at one time these schools do not look like the Hausa, you know. It we used to study from the houses of the sheikhs. They have school, but the teacher would be only one, teaching different subjects from the beginning to up to a certain level. So normally you change from one teacher to another. You learn fiqh from one, you go for another to forward. Literature, you go for to another for other subjects. That's what we used to. So by sometime in 1969, I was 16 then, I started what you might be called formal education. There was a school called School for Provincial Arabic School. This is a place where the then local authority was teaching, training those who will teach in the primary school, who will teach Arabic and Islamic studies. So I was there for about 2 years, 69, 70. There were 71 to 75, I was in a college in a different city. Formerly I was born in Zaria, that's why I started studying. And I went to a provincial Arabic school for Arabic studies in Kano. Okay, the school of Arabic studies in Kano has two sections. One is called grade two teachers, Kismar Ma'alimin, the teacher section in Arabic. And the other one is called higher Muslim studies. This is mostly is in Arabic only. But the other one, one will study also in English language. It's like any other secondary, English language, mathematics, geography, history, all in English language.
Right.
In addition, there will be Arabic and Islamic studies, but it is like any other college. The only addition is that it's Arabic language, which is compulsory, and the Islamic studies, which is also compulsory. All right.
So out of all of your studies, what was key, you think, in creating the Sheikh Zakzaki that we know today?
Well, at that time, I was just been trained as a teacher, for example. After I finished school in 1975, I started as a teacher. But during my study in those 5 years, I was also interested in subjects that were not being taught in the school. So I started privately to study them. This includes government, economics, You know, and
that was key. Huh?
Yeah, I was interested in so I think in 1974 I sat for examination in ordinary level of, in those subjects, and in 75 after finishing school, you know, as a trained teacher for primary school successful training. So I also at the same year sat for advanced level in four different subjects. That's the maximum advanced level one can take. That would include government, economics, Islamic studies, and I think Hausa language. That's the maximum. I also studied Islamic history, advanced level, but I did not write the examination. So success in those two examinations qualified me to start a degree course a year later, you know, in 76. Mm-hmm. So from 76 to 79, I was studying BSc Economics in a famous university in my own hometown, you know.
Right.
So those 70s, late 70s, you know, in the university, it was ideological conflict. There were communists. Many of the teachers, particularly in the Faculty of Social Sciences, were communists.
There was a lot going on in the world in the 70s.
You know, and there were people who were divided into three. There was people who were satisfied with the status quo, mostly Christians, because Christians are not advocating anything. And then there was those who think that the change, there should be change, but that should be in the form of communism. And there are few of us who felt that Islam was also an ideology which can also be used to establish a society, and the social justice, the communists are calling, but it will be found in Islam.
Well, let me just stop you there, because especially in the 70s, that was the time of communists, as you said, socialist movements. Mm-hmm. And we know that we hadn't had like a successful Islamic state. So, but you had studied economics and other aspects, jurisprudence. What made you think that could be key to solving a lot of the problems that people were going through?
I have a background of Islamic studies. I have studied Islam a lot. All what they traditionally used to learn in those years, in that time, I have always studied it. And those who are calling for communism, they are calling for social justice, but they have problem with religion. They equate Islam with Christianity. They think that whatever happened in the history of Christianity in Europe, they now come and apply it on Islam. They know nothing about Islam. You know, just the Karl Marx called religion as the opium of the people. So he Karl Marx has no knowledge of Islam at all. He was talking about Christianity as he knew it. So I said that, look, you don't know Islam. Whenever they are talking about Islam, they talk about the Umayyad dynasty or the Abbasid dynasty, and some, you know, there was a revolution in Nigeria 100 years before the coming of the colonialists, and later on it was established of emirates. So those emirs were in control of those emirates, and then they always cite emirs and what they were doing as if that was Islam, you know.
Right.
And they attack Islam a lot. So we were defending Islam. We said, look, Islam can supply social justice much more than what you think.
Mm-hmm. And,
but if what you equate Islam with Christianity is not the same. They are two, they have so different history. You can't apply what you know about Christianity on Islam. You have to study Islam in its own right. So at that time, of course, we knew nothing about the calling of Imam Khomeini. We didn't know anything about it, but there was this ideological conflict until late 70s when the Islamic Revolution came up.
So then it's 1979. Revolution in Iran took place. What happened? What was it? Because you had been talking about, as a student, and talking about the possibility of establishment of Islam as a state or a state of government or total way of life. So then the revolution takes place in Iran. What did you feel when this took place?
It gave us a hope. It showed that what we were yearning and aspiring, which others were saying it was not possible in the present time. In part, they were saying that Islam was established before, and it ruled the world before, but it is not capable of ruling the present day life, a world which is sophisticated in science and technology. They think that Islam is a bygone. It has ruled in history and that's all.
Yeah.
So the Islamic revolution in Iran changes the thing. You see, it has practically come to life. So it gave us hope. And then we were now all, happy. You see what you think that cannot happen in the modern time has happened elsewhere. So it can also happen where we are. And impact every part of the world is possible. What they were thinking, it was impossible, it became possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that, of course, we were thinking that it was possible, but that some may say, how are you going to have the army to fight? Or are you going to, you join the system and they change it at the top? Or, make a political party, Islamic political party or anything of that sort.
Right.
And then join election and win. Now, the way of Imam has shown it, if you have the people change. The revolution is not a change of a government.
Right.
It is change of people, change of attitude of people. And it has practically happened in Iran. Alhamdulillah, that shows. Immediately we showed all our allegiance and support to the Islamic revolution and the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Right. Now, we get into the establishment of the Islamic movement of Nigeria, and it's really interesting because you have a whole wide range of individuals, even those who are not Muslims. Some of them, from what I understand, may not even be religious. And, of course, Sunni and Shia, part of this movement. What is key in that? What do you teach that it's all-encompassing, bringing all types of people to the way?
All people like justice, and they do not like injustice. Nobody wants oppression. And, we are under oppression of some sort. Our country has been colonized by the British, and the British continue to control those in authority, and they continue also to tap our resources for their own use, so we felt that we are not fully independent. We are only we have been made to be as a state under a certain empire. So another thing is, the puppets they have established, they are always after themselves, and that's why the communists were calling for social justice, And now we are saying that, but Islam has provided a model in the time of the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and then you have a new model now in modern time, the Islamic Republic of Iran. So we are calling people to come together and act against common enemy, a common ideology. We might call it, anything. We might call it oppression. Everybody should be
against colonialism.
You see, so. This attracts, those who are former communists. Because communism, wanted to dwindle in the 80s. All those who were advocating, a lot of all those who were advocating for communism turned to Islam. The Christians, think that we are only the people who show it. We do what we say. They think that they can trust what we are saying, but they cannot trust others, even though they may be Muslims. But they may use Islam for their own use, but they feel that we are actually doing what we are saying, and they believe that we are actually honest what we are doing. So this attracts them as well. And of course, we try to shun anything that will divide people. We are not so sectional in what we are doing. Even though those who attack us, they always try to marginalize and call us we are just different from the society. But our activities and our relation to the people show the contrary. So this is what actually makes it possible for us to go along with all the people. And we are not against anyone, and we can go along with anyone.
As we're speaking, it's close to the anniversary of the Zaria massacre that took place. And knowing the story of what happened, I want to look at it from a different angle, because we saw the dedication of the brothers and sisters during that situation, trying to stand up for what they believe, also protecting you. What is key to that belief system that they're willing to give their lives for what they feel is the truth? Just tell me, as far as the Islamic movement in Nigeria itself, what has happened that we see this type of dedication to Islam?
Zaria massacre was myself the height of attacks we had and persecution we have, but it all through since the early 80s. For the last 40 years, we have been under different persecutions. So as time is moving, I myself, for example, in the 70s, we are very few. There was a time we would gather in a masjid and we would give up plain pulse cap sheet for everybody to write his name. And the last number may be 25, and we will be surprised that so many people have come. And this 25 have come from different parts of the country. And then this on it was increasing and a number, and it becomes from tens to hundreds to thousands and so on. And the persecution, the authority, even since with the time we were in the university in the late 70s, they were seeing that as far as they were concerned, that was a danger. And they started, the persecution started right from that time. And it went through until, there were different persecutions in different forms, including imprisonments. They now come to the conclusion that they have to deal with us once and for all. And it started in our kill. Now, coming to your question, people have built pace. Slowly they built the face, and they have learned a lot from the examples of the sacrifice of Ahlul Bayt, particularly during the times of Ashura, from this 10 days, and it increases to 40 days, and all the whole of Muharram and all the whole of Safar, these 2 months, we spend them all still, making, commemoration of what has happened to the family of the Prophet. And whatever happens to you is just, you feel it is so little compared to the sacrifice of the Ahlul Bayt. And that's, we draw inspiration from that. And we also draw inspiration from the stand of the Islamic Revolution also, where people stood by, supported the Imam. And that's how, the faith built in people, some people, they make some different accusations, and they say maybe it is because you indoctrinate people, or they think that there is any other way, we use finance or something of that sort. So you better say that these people are mad. Unless you say you are mad, they are not out, they are out of their senses. That would be the case if they are out of their senses, okay, or if they have been drugged to behave the way. But what you see is an outcome of faith and dedication and sacrifice. And this is so little when compared to what those family of the Prophet have suffered through the history. And we draw inspiration from that.
Well, when we look at Islamic movement in Nigeria, I mean, we see, I just talked about Zaria, but also we see every year and people dedicated on the Day of Quds, and going out, and usually there are some martyrs just about every year. I want to know, in the middle of the situation as far as your own problems that exist in Nigeria, what was key for you that Quds would be commemorated in that way?
Well, since the time the Imam, late Imam Quddus Sirruh has declared the last Friday of Ramadan for showing solidarity with Palestine, we also started doing it, but in a little way. We started doing it with demonstrations with very few people. You know. And you know, after the demonstration, we would gather and have lectures for 2 or 3 days. And we started, it was not possible at the beginning, we start to do it in Ramadan, because we have to bring people to come from different parts of the country to participate. So we were doing it immediately after Ramadan, the first Friday after Ramadan. And some people were even saying, why should you do it? They would say, if we did the last Friday of Ramadan, only few people will attend. So we started with first Friday after Ramadan. Mm-hmm. You know, people will be able to travel.
Right.
Until when the number becomes so large that we don't have to gather in one place. We can do it even in a neighbor town. Then we said now we can celebrate it on the last day of Ramadan, and people don't have to come to one place. We used to gather all in Zaria. Mm-hmm. Until when the number becomes so large, we now say that every city should do it. But not every city, of course, larger city. We selected about 22 cities. We said that it should take place in those places. And, you know, unfortunately, the response from the authorities in Nigeria is always violent. Even though the demonstration is just peaceful demonstration, you see, but their response is always to come. And, you know, sometimes, abruptly, you know, they will come and open fire. And so many times there will be nothing. You have no idea which time they will attack and which time they may not. And which town they may attack and which town they may not attack. So they were asking, some people are asking us, how do you overcome this? We said, well, these people have given us, a stand. They said, either you stop it or we deal with you. So we are not stopping. Do whatever you may do. And we will never stop. And we tell them the Quds Day has come to stay until the liberation of Quds. We will never stop that demonstration, whether they put open fire or not. And that's what our answer to them. So that's how sometimes it goes well without any itch, you know. And sometimes abruptly they just attack it. Alhamdulillah, it has been increasing. You know. We formerly were not doing even in the federal capital. But now it is the largest gathering is in the federal capital now.
Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, thank you so much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for staying with us. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Kids.
over with tears, and their little hearts are shattering out of fear. Did you hear the sound of explosion? Whose home was destroyed? Do you know the owner of the house? Are they familiar to you? Anyway, they are a human. Just let you know. You know, after every explosion, a kid starts shivering like hell and never gets back to the person he was before. Listen, the destiny of the people in this land has been interwoven with the children's cries for 75 years. Look at that mother. The mother who is pressing her dead child to her chest. And over there, a father is standing on the rubble of his hopes. Soil, the traces of blood everywhere, homelessness, darkness, starvation, and thirst is. A mother moans, a father screams, and a kid is no longer laughing. I'll narrate them. I will narrate the wounds which need time to heal. And the resistance will guarantee a bright future for them, for sure.
Gaza Vibes.
Little daughter, be a hopeful baby. I know you're hungry, but please forgive me. I know you're cold, darling. I am cold too. I will never get warm. I know the secret behind the seasons. I know that spring comes soon. We should pin our hopes on God. That is why your father Ahmad named you Amal. So be calm, my hope. Let me tell you a story. This is the first, or maybe the last story that your mother tells you. The story of me, Ahmad, your brother Amr, and you, Amal. We had a beautiful home in Beit Lahia. Our home was small, but it was very beautiful. Oh, I can still remember the olive groves your great-grandfather had planted in our garden years before we were born. Your father and I had both lost our families in one of the Zionist regime's attacks, so we just had each other. Ahmad was a teacher and I took care of Amr at home. Oh, Amr, your brother would have gone to school this fall. The Zionist attacks had just started and many had lost their lives in these assaults. You know, my daughter, being a mother is an endless struggle for protecting your children. With the autumn's arrival, before the leaves fall, bombs started raining down. It was almost noon. Ahmad had gone to Beit Hanun and Amr was at school. That suddenly, were falling down. I panicked then. Amr! Oh my God, Amr! The window's glasses had been shattered into pieces. I went out with difficulty and I saw people running toward the main street. Every step I took forward, I felt I was getting close to the school. I asked, where was the struck? Someone shouted, the school. Oh, Amr, my son. When I got conscious, I saw Ahmad beside the school's rubble. I screamed, Amr, my son, Amr. Your father searched for your brother's body, but what he found was just a piece of burnt clod. The next day, Ahmad took us to Jabalia by his friend's car. Situation there was not better. We then moved to Khan Yunis, where we are now. And I gave birth to you in a tent here. Oh, we were very hungry and had no food to eat. Ahmad went out to fetch some food, but he was able to bring food that was enough for just a week. But once he decided to go fishing, as his forefathers did as their profession. As the Zionist regime forces attacked the Gaza fishermen even prior to the war, Ahmad chose to go fishing at night. He told me, "I'll come back with food." Was when Ahmad went to where Amr was. And here's just you and I, Ahmad. My dear girl, I am hopeful. Thank God, we're still at home. Here in Gaza, Palestine, our ancestral land. If we are destined to die, we choose to die here in our homeland. Oh, look at there! It's Ahmad and Amr. Darling, they are your father and brother. They have come to meet us.
This program is dedicated to the martyrs of Gaza.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Why is the month of Ramadan superior to other months? May 19th, 2018. Allah, the Exalted, has made this month superior to others. One of the reasons for this superiority is the act of fasting. Another reason is that He sent down the Holy Quran in this month. Another reason is the night of Qadr. The month of Ramadan enlightens and cleanses hearts and souls through fasting, engaging in zikr, remembrance of Allah, dua, supplications, and divine prayers, through reciting the Holy Quran, and by engaging in many other virtuous activities which religious people benefit from. In fact, from the night of Qadr onwards, religious people who engage in fasting begin a new year. During the night of Qadr, their fate for the entire year is recorded by the divine angels who record our actions. During the night of Qadr, one enters a new year, a new stage, and in fact, a new life and birth. From this night onwards, one begins a path with his or her provisions of piety. On the middle of this path, certain stages have been determined for us in order to refresh our memory and remind us of certain other things.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Without God's help, no person or no people will achieve dignity and happiness. And divine help has certain requirements, as we say in this dua. O God, I ask you to give me the requirements for your mercy. One of the most important requirements for divine mercy is that the Iranian officials and managers in charge of different sectors feel committed before Allah the Exalted and the people. Without a doubt, the stronger and the more dynamic or enthusiastic this feeling is, the more we benefit from divine mercy. We should move forward and we should accompany our movement with divine intentions and with the intention of getting closer to God. We should know that if we apply these methods, God's assistance and blessings will be definite. The month of Ramadan is an opportunity for gaining piety, and the purpose of fasting is that you may learn piety. The Holy Quran, chapter 2, verse 183.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
To think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza,